Cantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents The Wasteland, Zero Circle, by Mike Ignatov, narrated by Gary Bennett. Chapter 1.
You worthless piece of trash!
A powerful kick in the rear almost sent me flying face first into the ground.
What are you crawling on the ground for, eh? Decided to collect dung like your mother and the rest of the women do? Get up and fight me like a man.
I didn't utter a word, because I was busy with something very important. I was digging through the sand, looking for either a stick or a stone that someone from the village could have left here. After all, it could have happened that over the years they lost at least one stone here. Stones were heavy and sharp, and it'd be nice to ram one into Virgil's stupid head to see just how red his blood was. Jerks. There was the sound of a couple of sharp slaps and pained cries. It brought joy to my heart.
Get out of here.
Elder D, my bully said slowly. We were just talking to the little twerp, as if he were a real warrior. How will he grow up to be a good fighter if all he does is crawl and hide behind others?
Virgil, don't test my patience.
There was another slap, followed by a muffled cry.
I'll break your arm next time.
The short silence that followed was broken by an angry hiss.
Let's go, guys.
I sat on the sand, continuing to endlessly let it spill through my fingers, like water through a sieve, looking at the backs of my assailants. Thank you, Uncle D, I said quietly.
They're getting bolder, he replied after a short pause.
Once all of the sand had trickled through my fingers, I looked up at the muscular man standing in front of me. His short black hair was covered with a thin layer of the wasteland's dust. In the wrinkles on his forehead and pursed thin lips, I saw hints of guilt. I looked away, unable to withstand the gaze of those blue eyes. Dee did the same. No wonder, I smiled sadly. Virgil's getting ready to take his father's place as the leader. He's looking for loyal allies.
He'll be a mediocre leader, Dee snorted. The moment he does something wrong, and believe me, he will, the warrior closest to him will kick him out of the hut.
These are just your predictions, I said calmly and finally looked at the blue eyes. Dee's sun-kissed face was as kind as ever. He may not be the leader yet, but he's still capable of kicking us out of the village if Mom stops being of use to his family. And there'd be nothing you could do about it. You didn't hit Virgil, did you? Dee looked away and sighed.
You're a very smart boy. Your father would have been so proud of you. I'm sorry that you had to grow up so fast.
I chuckled and shook my head. Unfortunately, I'm the most despised member of our village. Don't take it personally, but I'd like to be alone now.
Of course. Forgive me, my boy.
But a gap of 2 levels isn't something one can overcome with desire alone. Dee paused for a moment. He then pulled something out of his pocket and gave it to me.
Here, give it to your mother. I had some luck today.
I listened to the sound of his footsteps fading away, and then to the silence of the wasteland, interrupted occasionally by the song of the insects and the quiet whistling of the wind. Feeling something hot on my palm, I looked down and saw a pebble. It wasn't suitable for bashing anyone's head in, as it was the size of a thumb, but it was still something. Black and triangular, it looked like a fragment from the ancient period. I decided to keep it as a memento of today's humiliation and my powerlessness. Smooth and glistening, the fragment seemed undamaged by sand or time. Deciding to take a better look at it later, I put it in my coin purse and focused my attention on the jute bag that my uncle had left me. Untying it, I took a peek inside. As I thought, it was a quirogal carcass. I remembered my dad praising uncle's hunting skills whenever they'd go hunting with the villagers. We'd feast tonight. Thank you, uncle. Groaning and rubbing my sores, I got up. Dinner wouldn't cook itself, after all. Sister came home first and helped me prepare everything for dinner. She scrubbed the dining table clean, doused it with boiling water, wiped it, and set the table with colorful bowls made of light clay. Eyes full of joy, she was dancing by the hearth. I had to threaten her with a smack on the head to calm her down. Mom, as always, returned after sunset. I helped her unfasten the straps of her carrier. The contraption fell with a thud and sank deep into the sand that had turned silver under the light of the moon. Barely standing on her feet, she couldn't make it to the hut on her own, so I took her by the elbow and helped her inside. I was seething with rage as I paced around the house, while my sister helped her wash the sand off her aching body. She worked hard from dawn to dusk, circling the wasteland and looking for wild cherries to fill her bag with, which was more than anyone in the village had. Why were you out for so long?
I want to go to the Black Mountain tomorrow to collect herbs, so I decided to collect a double portion of manure today. It's a good thing I know about places that no one else in the village does, she said, and smiled tiredly but kindly. At that moment, she was the most beautiful woman in the world. Mom, I felt my eyes sting and water. The mountain? Please, don't be silly. Stay with us. What if you meet the beast?
Smiling, she walked over to me. Embracing me, she placed my head on her chest and stroked my hair.
I'm careful and experienced. One could even call me a veteran of the wastelands. I know when and where to go.
Or have you forgotten that your mother has reached the 8th level of ascension?
Dad was even more experienced, I argued and tried to break free. And see where that got him? Honey, what's wrong? Did they bully you again?
Yes, I mumbled, settling down and casting my glance on the neatly swept floor.
They said some awful things. Maybe you should join the herbalists.
She sighed.
It was because of my work again. You realize that here, in a place that even God abandoned, there's nothing else to do except collect dung and grass?
I nodded reluctantly. We had already talked about this many times, but it never got easier.
More than half of the women in our village collect Jerry's dung. What else can one do in a place where a piece of wood is considered a jewel?
Sure, there are cleaner jobs, picking herbs, cooking food for the hunters, looking for stones, scrubbing skins.
I was once a tanner, you know that. And you also know that to get any job here, one must first talk to the chief. And I'm not going to ask your dad's murderer for anything, she added with a hiss.
Hold on, what do you mean? I looked up at her in confusion.
You told me that the beast killed him. He died because of his injuries.
Darlings, sighed, she finally let go of me. I have to confess something. I'm to blame for our ill fortune. Raising her head, she looked at me with tired, gray eyes. The fire from the hearth cast shadows on the delicate features of her face, changing her expression with her every move.
Layla doesn't remember this, but you, Lagarde, will and must. This barren desert, forgotten by all, isn't our home. We are not from the White Wasteland. The wagon and Eternal Road aren't our home either. Circle Zero is definitely a place cursed by the heavens, but both of you were born in one of its best locations. Your dad and I lived in a 5-star village called Arroyo in the Black Wasteland. A respected tanner and a blacksmith, level 9 and 8. We were above everyone else. Do you remember your home, dear?
Vaguely. I remember a big house, a wooden table. I closed my eyes, hoping to remember more. Piles of dirt and flowers, broad streets covered with stone.
That's right. She nodded and covered her face with her hands, wiping her tears. Our house. Your dad always dreamed of taking us all to the first circle. He was only level 9, so that wasn't possible. Still, he was always looking for a way to level up, asking the elders who remembered life in other circles for advice. Although, what could those who had been forced to go to Circle Zero tell him?
Nothing.
Still, he didn't lose hope. One day, he fulfilled a small order for a new warrior stationed in Arroyo as an overseer. Instead of payment, he asked for advice. I still remember his words.
She raised her head and looked at the shadows that were dancing on the walls. Her face was frozen in grief.
It was his advice that brought us here. He told your dad that he had a poor understanding of the basics, that his talent was mediocre, and that he had, perhaps, chosen the wrong path. He told him that he couldn't do much to change his ways at his age. He said that the best decision would be to go on a journey, to see new places, meet new people, and see the world. That fighting would help him understand the mistakes he was making and help him fix them. He told him that he'd be able to reach level 10 and get close to the tempering stage. He said that there were, of course, easier ways to do this, but that they weren't available to a Circle Zero inhabitant.
She paused and looked at us with bloodshot eyes. Both my sister and I were silent.
"My first mistake, my darlings," she continued, "was that I gave in and followed your dad. We sold the house and the workshop, took you, and went on a trip. I can't say that it was all bad. We traveled throughout our circle. Others may think that our wasteland is the same all over, but that's not true. We learned to appreciate its beauty and even saw ancient architecture in some places. These huge ancient structures gave these places a sense of incredible power. Layla was born during this journey." I hugged my sister, who leaned her head on my shoulder, and we continued to listen to Mom's story. "The warrior was right," she said with a smile. "Eventually, your dad managed to reach level 10. Unlike me, I didn't care about ascension, so I stopped collecting energy. You, my darlings, you were the only thing that mattered to me." Her smile grew. It was joyful and loving, and her eyes sparkled with happiness. "Your dad wanted to return to Arroyo, to take the exam and make us proud. So we finished our journey and returned home. And without the help of a mentor from the First Circle, your dad reached the warrior stage."
Chapter 2. Stunned, I stared at her, trying to make sense of the story. I had never heard anything like this from Oracle, our local teacher, who'd often sit by the campfire and, accompanied by a bottle of booze, tell us stories. And that man loved bragging about things he had learned in Circle One. Then again, the first warriors ever probably didn't have anyone to teach them their craft. But this was before the ancients. Hell, those warriors were probably nothing more than legends, even for them. My dad was a strong man, there was no denying that. But could he have really been a warrior? In Circle Zero, there was no one to teach us how to reach the final stages of ascension. There never were and never would be. Even children knew that. "Our journey was nearing its end when we arrived at this cursed place," Mom continued in the meantime. She gritted her teeth while speaking, and I could almost feel the anger seeping out of her. I'd never seen her like this. It was almost scary. "It didn't take long for Ramil to get in a fight with Cardo. He demanded a whole silver coin from us for this lousy hut that even the dung beetles avoid. As if that wasn't enough, after each hunt he'd try to take the biggest cut for himself." I nodded and glanced at the pot with the stew. "You're used to this, Lagarde. You know that the law dictates that half of the loot goes into the common pot. This law is honored everywhere. Everywhere but here. Cardo's behavior angered your dad, and he beat him. Cardo didn't stand a chance against him. He didn't expect that an outsider would dare challenge him, someone of the ninth level. His arrogance was his downfall in the end. He harbored a grudge against your dad, though he always smiled whenever I was nearby. I hate to admit it, but I often wished that your dad hadn't held back and got rid of him. Cardo deserved much more than a couple of punches. The villagers who had gotten used to starvation would have welcomed Cardo's death and our arrival." She paused to take a breath. "And then the day of our departure came. That fateful, rainy day." Layla grabbed my hand, and I squeezed her little cold palm. For her, that day was the end of her carefree childhood. "If only your dad had known some spirit technique. We visited so many places and spent almost all of our money buying rare recipes from blacksmiths and tanners. But we couldn't find any detailed descriptions of the techniques. Only poor retellings full of lies and exaggerations,"
Even Oracle couldn't teach her dad anything, the lying drunkard. She shouted and slammed the table with her fist in anger. If your dad had had access to the techniques, he would have killed the damn beast. He wouldn't have died in my arms.
Layla broke down, let go of my hand, and hugged her.
Mom, don't cry. Mom, she sobbed. Oh, darling, I'm sorry, she whispered.
Embracing Layla, she stroked her hair and back.
I'm sorry, my darlings. Oh, I'm so sorry for not listening to your dad. He begged me to get you all back to Arroyo, to get into the caravan. But I didn't listen. He was too wounded to travel, and I couldn't leave him. So we stayed here. I was so blinded with my worry for him that I failed to see how this would affect us in the long run. I didn't know that Carter wouldn't let us leave. He made us pay a hefty price for shelter, food, and medicine. That bastard took advantage of our helplessness to get money. But I gritted my teeth and endured, praying that Ramil would get better and that we'd finally get out of here.
Now it was my turn to grit my teeth and push back tears. I remembered the day after Dad saved the other hunters at the cost of his health. On that day, Virgil and his gang beat me up for the first time.
And my third mistake. My dear, I had to sell your inheritance. I'll never forgive myself for it.
She looked down and kissed Layla's head, mumbling apologies as she did so.
A week later, a caravan arrived. It was a small one with only two merchants. I traded all of my leatherworking tools for one bunny restoration potion, hoping that it'd save your dad. But
she fell silent, and I lowered my eyes to the floor again. There were wet spots on the ground. Was I crying?
God, I remember that day as if it were yesterday. The merchant convinced me that the potion was taken too late, and that Ramil was too weak. I refused to believe him. I heard so much about this potion. I heard the praises sung about it, and I just simply refused to believe that it couldn't save my husband. Hell, I saw people that were treated with it. Most of them had wounds worse than that of your dad's, and they still lived.
She cried, wiping the tears from her face. She cried that day, too.
I was sure that the potion had been tampered with, but I couldn't prove anything. The seal on it was intact. I had a witness with me when I examined it, but I still refused to believe. For months, I watched the damn merchant talk business with Cardo, and I was sure that the two had killed my husband together. 2 months ago, when a caravan from Arroyo came, a big one, I met a wandering pharmacist and handed him the potion. I gave him all the money I had left.
Oh, but it was worth it, she said with a sinister giggle that made a shiver run down my spine.
Mom,
I said, and wiped my eyes with the collar of my shirt.
What did he say? He said that the potion wasn't a restoration one, but a reinforcement one, that it had sent what little energy your dad had left into enhancing his muscles rather than into healing his wounds. The two are roughly the same price, and had your dad had it, he'd still be alive. I doubt that the merchant did this all on his own. He had no reason to hate your dad. I'm convinced that Cardo had bribed him. There's no other explanation.
Sniffing, I staggered to my feet and went outside. I couldn't stay in the hut anymore. I couldn't. Leaning my back against the wall, I slipped to the ground, not caring for the stains the dirty bricks would leave on my clothes. Wiping my eyes with my sleeve, I looked up at the stars. Somewhere, far, far away, a jackal howled, getting ready to go hunting. There was a barely audible roar of a feline, probably a leopard, and the jackal went silent, too scared to try and go hunt before the golden beast had. Listening to the sounds of the night, I delved deep into my memories. There were so many holes there, so many blurred images. But I believed my mom and her words, especially since, less than a month ago, I overheard Cardo's conversation with a merchant when I was hiding from Virgil in the training fields. The conversation sounded like that of two friends, full of hints and inside jokes known only to them, but clear enough for me to understand that everything was going according to their plan, if not better, and that the next potion would arrive on time. The merchant also said that he wouldn't let Cardo down, and that he wouldn't mind if he increased the supply demand. Lightning flashed on the horizon, indicating that a storm was coming. Getting up, I looked through the window into the hut. "Mom, do we have any relatives in Arroyo?" "No, I'm an orphan." She was sitting by the hearth with Layla in her lap and combing her waist-long hair. "Your grandparents live there, but we were never on good terms with them. They never forgave your dad for marrying me and messing up their plans. They stopped talking to him. But we did keep in touch with his brother, even though his father had forbidden it. 2 months ago I sent him a letter, but he never wrote back. I don't know why. 6 years passed since we left, but I try not to think of the worst. Why don't you sell Dad's tools and buy us a place in the caravan?" "He left them to you. I don't have the heart to do that, nor do I want to go against your dad's wishes." Her gaze wandered off to the little chest at the foot of her bed. "Even if it might save us?" "Don't fool yourself." She shook her head and returned her gaze to me. "If something, God forbid, happens to your uncle, we'll be without support or money. I don't have my tools anymore, so I wouldn't be able to support us. My teacher was a good man, but he had passed away long ago. And even if we do make it to Arroyo, no one would let someone else's apprentice work for them, not to mention that I'm already too old." I jumped to my feet, ready to object, but fell silent when I saw the look in her eyes. This wasn't the time to act like a child. Mom seemed to have aged 10 years during the course of our conversation. "I'd have to settle for a dirty job even there. Arroyo isn't cheap, and we wouldn't be able to rely on our friends forever. Believe me, I know what I'm talking about. We'd just end up back at the bottom, in the slums where we'd live worse than here. I was once a beggar, son. You don't want to end up there. I could join the monster hunters, yes, but that's a deadly job, and I don't want you two to be orphans. I don't want you to suffer as I did. A child should never have to bury their parent, let alone both of them." "Hold on," I interrupted. "Would our grandparents allow us to live in the slums? Us, the children of their beloved son?" Mom smiled wryly and shook her head. Dry locks danced around her pale face and shoulders. "To them, you're my children, spawns of a thief and a beggar." "Thief?" "I hope you'll never have to experience hunger, my son. You don't know how far it can push a person. Speaking of which, let's eat. You two must be hungry," she said, and looked back at the hearth and the clay pot from which a pleasant scent was spreading. Sighing, I made peace with the fact that I wouldn't find out anything else today. Chapter 3. I hid from prying eyes in one of the caves on the riverbank and threw pebbles into the water. No one cared for pebbles. They were far too small to be significant to the villagers. According to the books, there used to be a huge city here once, with buildings so high that they reached the sky. They were as tall as the Black Mountain. It was hard for me to imagine hundreds of such tall buildings. It was even harder to imagine all of them falling and turning into the snow-white sand after which our wasteland had been named. This whiteness sprawled into infinity, or so it seemed. As far as the eye could see, there was nothing but the blinding white, and no matter how far you dug, you'd see nothing except it. The city used to be huge, so huge that you could walk 2 days in any direction before reaching its border. But now, only the shadow of its past glory remained, black bones jutting out of the sands. I had no idea what it was that helped these giants to continue standing, but they stood proud against the wasteland sky. Low, with only 2, 3, rarely 5 floors, with their empty windows, They inspired fear and apprehension. During the night, under the light of the moon, when white appeared black and black appeared white, the whole area looked like some parody of reality. At those moments, the ruins looked like skeletons of some long-dead monsters. I was once in the wasteland during the night, and I still trembled in fear whenever I recalled the eerie atmosphere that swirled around this place like a morning mist. I knew that it was silly to fear the homes of your ancestors, but I couldn't help it. I shook my head and sighed. For the 100th time tonight, I remembered Mom's story. For some reason, this made me recall a saying I had heard among the caravaneers. I look at the sky, but see no sun. This meant that a sandstorm was on the way, ready to bury everything underneath it. That was how I felt right now, like a lone caravaneer in the middle of the desert, waiting to be devoured by a wave of memories and dread. I didn't used to believe Mom when she told me that we'd save up enough money to leave. But now I was certain that she was keen on leaving as much as I was. No wonder she kept going to the mountain despite my protests. She was probably collecting and hiding herbs from Cardo in hopes of selling them to one of the caravans. I couldn't help but admire her. She suffered humiliation and silence so that we could have a better life one day. And I... The pebble in my pocket felt like it weighed a ton. It wouldn't let me forget about my own humiliation and my desire to use it to bash Virgil's head in. I knew well that this urge would grow more each passing day. How was I supposed to keep my cool, looking at the son of my father's murderer? I have to be patient, I kept telling myself. A year or two more and we'll be out of here, far from these bastards. I imagined myself surrounded by Virgil's henchmen. I imagined myself bashing their heads in until they were nothing but red blotches on the sand. I smiled to myself. This would, unfortunately, forever remain a feeble dream, but it helped put my mind at ease. I'd never do that. Dad had sacrificed too much for me to sabotage our chances of leaving for Arroyo because of some brat. But I couldn't just sit still and let myself be a punching bag. I needed a goal, too. Taking the pebble out of my purse, I squeezed it tightly in my hand. Mom risked her life daily, wandering alone through the tunnels on the mountain. But she knew that her efforts were worth it whenever she stumbled upon a rare herb. Perhaps I could help water the community garden. Maybe I should give Mother my share of the stew. Maybe I should get some money. Money. As if they'd give that to a child who spends his days watering the garden and searching the sand for stones. Perhaps I need power. Last winter, I had reached the age at which one began their ascension. However, I wasn't allowed to join the others at the training grounds. Oracle just looked at me and turned away, making it clear that I wasn't welcome. I felt betrayed then, thinking that the entire village had turned against me, as everyone had the right to follow the teachings of the ancients. But now I knew that it had all been Cardo's doing. But that didn't matter. If Dad, who hadn't had a teacher, managed to reach the warrior stage on his own, so could I. Hell, with Dad's talent, I was sure that I had better chances than the others. All I needed was to get my hands on a manual so that I could figure out where to start. So that was my plan, and I told Mom about it that evening. "You're not allowed to train? Why didn't you tell me that?" she asked with a frown. "It doesn't matter. Do you have any manuals on how to train your meridians?" "How dare he?" she said, not paying attention to me. "Who gave him the right? The little... Oh, when I get my hands on him..." I sighed. "Mom... He killed Dad and ruined our lives. The whole village is starving because he keeps taking everything for himself. Do you think he gives a damn?" She looked at me and sighed. "You're right, dear." She tossed her hair behind her shoulder and lowered her gaze. "You are right. But you're wrong about us starving and him taking everything. My trained eye can't be deceived. Every day, both the hunters and the gatherers hide their goods in a special...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?